Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Now, last week, I moderated a mayoral candidates forum on issues of concern to lower-income New Yorkers. All five Democratic hopefuls and two of the Republicans, who also have third-party endorsements, took part. We played some newsworthy excerpts on Friday, as some of you heard. Now we'll hear a few more clips from some of the candidates, and I'll talk to Nancy Rankin from the Community Service Society, which was the lead sponsor of the event. The forum was timed to coincide with the release of their annual Unheard Third survey, a scientific public opinion poll that measures the attitudes of New Yorkers in the lower third of income in the city and compares those attitudes to those of other New Yorkers. Nancy, thanks so much for coming on, and thanks for your help putting on the forum.
Thank you for inviting me.
How many years has this annual Unheard Third survey been conducted now?
This is the 11th year now.
So we can compare over time as well as by income group and other demographics.
That's right.
And one finding of great concern right off the bat, you found that only half of New Yorkers, lower income or not, think it's possible for poor people to rise into the middle class today. That is a very troubling stat about how much belief there is left in the American dream as defined by the chance for upward mobility. Has that number been changing in your survey in recent years?
Well, that's the exact question we haven't asked all the time in the past years. And the reason that we asked it this year and it's so important is because we now see that New York State and the city are among the places in the country with the widest gap between the haves and the have-nots. And we see people are really concerned about that. Three out of four New Yorkers across incomes think that there's a serious problem of a disappearing middle class in New York.
And really across incomes. So I noticed that just under half of those in the middle and upper income groups said that it's just over half said that it's still possible to rise up from poor to middle class, and just under half of the poorest New Yorkers said it's still possible to rise from poverty to the middle class. In other words, only about half of everybody seems to still think the American dream is in effect in New York City today.
So I think what we're seeing is that not only are people worried about the divide, they see the divide is now becoming unbridgeable.
I see your lower third sample had a median income of $15,000. Compared to the citywide median of $52,000. I'm curious, did you find that the lowest income third of the city was disproportionately made up of senior citizens?
No, it is disproportionately people of color, though, of Hispanics and in particular and blacks.
And about that, not surprisingly, blacks and Latinos are more likely to be in the lower third than whites, but still more than a quarter of your lower third respondents were white, 28% of them. So would you say there's more white poverty in the city than people realize, and perhaps the basis for a multiracial, low-income political coalition?
Well, I think that there is probably more white poverty than people realize, but you'll also see that there are differences. And we do look at it on certain of the issues. We see some differences across races.
Such as?
Well, for example, on the stop and frisk question, where we saw that low-income whites are more apt to say that it should be continued, low-income blacks are more apt to say that it should be discontinued, and Hispanics are somewhere in the middle.
And we'll get back to stop and frisk and crime later in the segment and play a clip of some of the candidates pertaining to that. But the survey finds that the number one concern of people in the lower third of income is, not surprisingly, jobs with the potential for upward mobility, just what we were talking about. Can you go further into what that means and how people chose that issue?
Well, we read a long list of issues, and we asked people to name their top two concerns. What do they want this mayoral race to be about? And, of course, as you said in the opening, that's why we do the survey. We're trying to elevate the issues and concerns and views of low-income New Yorkers in the debate. And what we heard is that for low-income New Yorkers, the absolute number one issue for them is jobs, but it's jobs that give people a chance of getting out of poverty, of moving out of poverty. And what does that mean? It means things like there's a lot of support we found in the survey for raising the minimum wage, for passing paid sick days, because people feel it's really a core value in New York and in America that if you're working hard, you deserve a decent wage. You shouldn't be living in poverty. And people also have a lot of concern about middle-skill jobs. Those jobs have been disappearing. So there is a lot of concern about we don't want to just see growth in the top and in the low-skill jobs, the people doing high-tech and the people bringing them sandwiches. We want to think about how do we attract middle-skill jobs.
And that seems to connect with another question in the survey, which was would people rather have a mayor who is business-friendly or who helps working people get ahead? What were the results on that question, both for the lower third and for the city as a whole?
Well, here there was real agreement across income groups. And by more than a 3-to-1 margin, New Yorkers are saying they want the next mayor to be concerned about helping working families get ahead as opposed to a mayor who is most concerned about business interests. If I could, I wanted to read a short thing that happened to be the lead story in the New York Times today. You probably saw it.
Yep.
And just to read one short line, corporate earnings have risen at an annualized rate of 20.1% since the end of 2008, the end of the recession. But disposable income inched ahead by 1.4% annually over the same period. So I think the question is not so much is it business versus workers, but who needs the help? Who should the government be helping here? And I think there's a sense that corporations, the big businesses in New York are doing just fine. And if you're worried about small businesses, what they care about is they want a long line of customers at the cashier. They want people with money in their pockets.
And I think the headline of that article was something like, and I don't have it in front of me, profits rise in the recovery, but not jobs.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a winner-take-all recovery. The top whatever percent seem to be making out entirely from the recovery, and that's troubling for the future of this country if it turns out to be a long-term trend. But the question itself and the way you posed it in the survey, would you rather see a mayor who's business-friendly or one who helps working people get ahead, suggests that people see a dichotomy, that business-friendly or helps workers get ahead are opposed to each other, even mutually exclusive. Now, as you know, because you were there, I asked several of the Democratic candidates if they think that's the case. I want to play the answer to that question from former Comptroller Bill Thompson, fairly representative of what some of the other candidates said, too.
I support paid sick. I believe that, and I'm going to make a couple of additional recommendations over the next couple of weeks because I believe we need to move forward now. At the same point, business and workers aren't at odds. They work together. The business community in this city needs people to work for them. They need trained people to work for them. They need people who are able to afford to live here and bring their families up in New York City.
Former Comptroller Bill Thompson, the other respondents to that question were Bill de Blasio, John Liu, and Sal Albanese. The Democrats, their responses were in a similar vein. But Nancy, what were you getting at when you asked that question? Were you assuming policies cannot be both business-friendly and help workers get ahead?
We weren't assuming that, but we were trying to pose it in a way where we can say, what's the priority here? What's the strategy? Who really needs government help at this point in the economy? And I want to say that part of the reason we framed it that way is because that's how the opposition to things like a living wage that's meaningful or paid sick days has framed it. And they've said the reason we can't pass paid sick days right now is because it'll hurt business and it'll hurt small business. So we wanted to ask, and basically New Yorkers across the board don't buy that argument. They just don't believe that something that a modest small benefit like having a few paid sick days is going to drive people out of business.
So, listeners, I don't necessarily want to have the paid sick day debate again here, which we've had a number of times. But on a more general basis, folks, do you think that business-friendly and helps workers get ahead are mutually exclusive. Do you think a mayor, current mayor or next mayor, can pursue things that are both business-friendly and help workers get ahead? What do you think about this? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As we talked to Nancy Rankin from the Community Service Society, which did their annual Unheard Third poll, which surveys both New Yorkers in the lower third of incomes and other New Yorkers to compare their responses. But if you want to get in on this question of whether policies need to be either worker-friendly or business-friendly, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, of course, just by way of political context, mandatory paid sick leave is an issue because only Christine Quinn among the Democratic candidates opposes such a law as too harmful to business. How does the particular issue poll? Because you did break that out as a question in its own right in this poll.
83% of New Yorkers across incomes, across gender, party, and so on, everyone supports paid sick days. They think it's reasonable, and they think that it goes to your question. They think that actually business and workers are both helped because business shouldn't want people there that are sick that are going to get all their coworkers sick.
So you didn't find a disparity between people in the lower third of incomes and the higher earning New Yorkers on this question of whether that should be a law?
No, there's universal support for this and very strong support.
The second highest priority for lower-income New Yorkers that you found in your survey was reducing crime, drugs, and guns. And we'll get to that in a minute after we take some calls on this question of worker-friendly versus business-friendly. Johnny in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, how are you? Thank you.
Good. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that, theoretically speaking, no, they do not oppose themselves at all, and I think it can actually work. But I think under the current circumstances of our economic and political, really more the basis of the American capitalistic economy, they do oppose themselves only because of the desire for so much profit margin that no one's thinking of the need for the working class.
Thank you very much. Max on the Upper East Side. You're on WNYC. Hi, Max.
Good morning, Brian. Biggest obstacle to this goals to help the poor people in New York and all over the big cities in this country is cheap disposable labor. Every small business you go around can hire cheap disposable labor, and they can rest assured that the laws will never be enforced.
So worker-friendly does not equal business-friendly. To Max, Judy in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I've got to share something with you, and this is from my own personal experience that I'm drawing on. But we talk a lot about poverty and that minorities are at the poverty level. And here's a question that just is mind-blowing for me, why the government continues to allow this. I personally lost my job in 2008. At 60 years old at the time, nobody was interested in hiring me. All I really wanted to get was food stamps. But because I got widowed Social Security, I was denied that. And yet I saw minorities standing online, some of which had babies 2 years old, and then others that were just born. And my question to New York government is, why do you allow women who are already collecting welfare for one child to continue to collect it for a second? Why can't they put a policy in place that says, listen, if you have a child already and you're collecting assistance for that child, then you've got to act responsibly. Mm. We're not paying for any more children.
Judy, I'm going to leave it there because it's a little off topic, and people certainly can have that debate. I think one of the answers to your question is that the welfare follows the child, and so the child is innocent in that, and so money flows to the child, and that's the nature of that policy. But we're talking about workers. We're talking about people in business and the people at the low end of the income spectrum who they employ for this particular policy conversation. And Robert in Valley Stream wants to use Brazil as a success story. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Yes, President Lula, he you know, he came from poverty, and he gave money to the poor people, and the economy boomed. Suddenly, the poor people had money to buy appliances, and the economy boomed.
Thank you.
60 Minutes.
Thank you very much. Well, I think you got a pretty good sampling there, Nancy.
Right. It sounds like exactly like what we heard from the survey.
Putting a little emotion and human voice on that. If the government, I guess you could almost call it trickle-up economics. If you have minimum wage, if you have paid sick leave, if you have things that are intended to support the incomes of low-income workers, that it's going to fight businesses' desire to have what one caller called cheap disposable labor, but not necessarily hurt a lot of businesses.
Right. I mean, I think if you look at the big picture and extend the trends of the direction we're going, people are asking, do we want New York to be like a third world city where wealthy foreigners come and they come to shop and go to the theater and dine at our fine restaurants, and the New Yorkers are the people earning poverty wages in the restaurants and serving them food, who can't, you know, even dream of going to a Broadway show or eating at those restaurants. You know, is that the city we want, or do we want a city where business wants to be here and wants to locate and can thrive here because we have the best educated labor force, because their employees can afford to live here, their employees want to send their kids to school here, and people have enough money in their pockets that they can afford to buy the things small businesses are selling.
Nancy Rankin from the Community Service Society, which is out with its annual Unheard Third survey, a citywide poll, but focusing on the needs and the attitudes of people in the lower third of incomes in New York and comparing them with everybody else. The second highest priority, and I want to get to this one more topic before we run out of time, the second highest priority for lower income New Yorkers that you found in your survey was reducing crime, drugs, and guns. And this placed much higher than reining in the NYPD's stop and frisk police program. Has crime been a perennial top priority in this survey over the years?
Actually, it has. And I think when I talk to higher income New Yorkers, they tend to talk about crime as a problem in the past. You know, oh, the bad old days in the 80s and early 90s when you had squeegee men and crack vials littering the sidewalk. And high death rates from murder. And now, but for low-income, you know, so for higher-income people, they say we don't want to go back to those bad old days. But low-income New Yorkers, crime is still a very present problem, and we've consistently seen that it's remained a problem and a concern.
So at the forum, all the candidates wanted to reform stop and frisk. A question from the audience came about stop and frisk, and they all wanted to reform it in some way. John Liu said he wanted to abolish it. But then I told them about your survey result, that crime itself was ranked much higher as an issue for most low-income New Yorkers, and I asked them for 30-second responses on what would be at the heart of their crime reduction programs. And here are the answers from Christine Quinn, Bill Thompson, Christine Quinn, Bill de Blasio, and John Liu. And again, with seven candidates on the stage, they just had 30 seconds to answer this follow-up question about anti-crime policies. Christine Quinn speaks first.
I think we need to, as soon as we have the resources, expand our police department. I actually think that more police officers will keep our city safer and be another way to reduce stop, question, and frisk, because every officer out there isn't going to be under such constant pressure, one. Two, we need to find ways to make CompStat even more comprehensive so we're not just looking at raw numbers of what police officers are doing or not doing, but drilling down even further to see what is the actual result of the interaction. Three, I think we need to build on some of the things that Ray Kelly has put in place. Like, for example, he took all the special victims units in the city and put them under one umbrella, really helping us finally head sexual assault
Bill
numbers
de Blasio,
in the right direction.
30 seconds. How do you make the city safer?
Let me offer a radical thought that will not be smiled upon at the New York Post. Civil liberties and public safety must go together. They are not opposed ideas. And if we don't get civil liberties right, if we don't get the relationship between police and community right, you can't have sustainable public safety. So the fact is, the people in the survey, Brian, who care deeply about about public safety should care about changing stop and frisk. They should care about keeping the police department certainly at the level we have it now, no lower in terms of strength and force. They should care about things like focus, deterrence, and gang.
I get it, and I have to stop you there. Mr. Luke.
They've got to end stop and frisk because it takes a huge amount of resource to be stopping so many hundreds of thousands of people, almost none of whom deserve to be stopped. And what it's doing is it takes away resources from strategies that have worked in other major American cities who have seen crime reductions and don't have stop and frisk. Let's borrow those strategies. Focus deterrence. Make sure you put the heat on the bad elements. And you know what? The fact of the matter is, have continuing stop and frisk where it has divided communities and separated them from the police.
All right. Candidates from the mayoral forum last Thursday night, which was at the First Corinthian Baptist Church, by the way, on East 116th Street, sponsored by the Community Service Society, the Union 32BJ, Make the Road New York, United New York, and the Center for Popular Democracy. My guest for just another few minutes is Nancy Rankin from the Community Service Society. She conducted their annual Unheard Third Survey, a scientific poll that asks what policies matter to lower-income New Yorkers and to the city as a whole. So, Nancy, they were much more eager to talk about stop and frisk than they were crime reduction. So despite the results of the poll, they seem to think that that's more of a political sweet spot.
Well, I mean, again, this is a poll, and we're very honest. Like, research does it for us. And so these are not my personal views or the views of CSS. We're reporting what the views of low-income New Yorkers are. And they're somewhat divided on stop and frisk. But I think they're also unsettled. So when you ask the question and you give them the argument that stop and frisk doesn't reduce crime, then you see they switch, and then they're, well, if it doesn't reduce crime, then it definitely should be discontinued.
If that's the case. And one other poll result that I want to throw in and get your take on that people might find surprising, 8 out of 10 low-income New Yorkers approve of Mayor Bloomberg's use of standardized testing as a centerpiece of improving education. Is that new this year?
That's a new question this year also, and I think mainly people would be surprised at that. But I think there are a couple of things going on. I think, first of all, low-income New Yorkers are very concerned about the measuring the progress of their students. They have a lot of choices, a lot of different schools. How do you tell which school's better? And they want some accountability. They want to be able to measure progress. So the real question is, how much testing, and does that mean the whole curriculum is about teaching to the test? And it's not necessarily true that, you know, that one implies the other.
30 seconds left. Anything else from the survey that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure to mention?
Yep, two things. One, affordable housing, also a big concern for low-income New Yorkers. Career and tech ed also gets huge support. And finally, I just want to mention we have our voter guide online now. If you go to our website, that says how all the candidates respond to these issues.
Nancy Rankin from the Community Service Society, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And again, for all your help with the forum last week. Listeners, if you want to hear the full hour and 52-minute mayoral candidate forum, we have it on our webpage. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, one of America's beloved pastors, Cecil Williams, 50-year pastor of Glide Memorial Methodist Church in San Francisco, and Janice Mirakatani, founding president of the Glide Foundation there. So unusual in their approach to religion that they took the cross down from the church years ago. Stay with us.